Welcome to the Animus podcast. This week we'll be talking with my good friend Yannick Jacob. Welcome, Yannick. Welcome.
Hey, Rob.
Great to be with you today.
Always a pleasure to be with you.
So, I know that you do many, many things. So, we could be here for hours.
We could indeed.
So, I suppose I'd like to just start with your notion of what coaching is or how you work as a coach.
What coaching is, I think that's the golden question. For many people, and I've training coaches for some time, that's the question that everybody asks themselves. And whenever I train people from the ground up, that is the question that I'm trying to give people not an answer to, because ultimately they need to find their own answer to that question. But I try to show them the range of what coaching can be.
Lovely.
And because I'm in parts of where I work, this is academic. So obviously we look at, the definition of coaching.
Okay.
And that is really difficult because there are hundreds of definitions out there. And it seems that in an age where everybody tries to find their niche to market themselves, every new coach finds another definition for what coaching is, which doesn't make it easier to define what coaching is. So it's somewhere between, at one end, it's psychotherapy or almost going into that route, into that direction. So there's a boundary somewhere. And on the other end, it's bordering mentoring and advice giving. And then part of my own research, what I've done a couple of years ago when I trained, I did my master's in existential coaching, I've looked quite deeply into the question of what kind of hats do we have? What kind of roles do we adopt as a coach? Because I don't believe that there's this one thing that is coaching. I believe that there are practitioners who decide to create a space with a client, and then something happens. And what happens depends on who you are and what kind of training you have, what kind of capabilities you have, the kind of person you are. So I always say who you are is how you coach.
You
need to show up authentically.
And I love that notion of that it's about the practitioner bringing themselves to the practice that creates what coaching is, not just a different definition of it. And you said there about your master's in existential coaching. So tell me a little bit about what it means to be an existential coach.
It's going in the same direction. So in essence, an existential coach is philosophically minded, which means existential coaches will have dived deep into the philosophy of what it means to be alive in a world with other people. So it's a philosophy of lived experience, of lived existence, which means what does it mean to be here? You know, what kind of inner conflicts do we all have? What kind of anxiety comes up for people just because they're people? You know, just because we're going to die at some point, but we don't know when and how. You know, we have a need to relate to others. But at the same time, we want to be ourselves, individual and special. You know, we long for certainty before we make decisions. But we can never be 100% certain about pretty much anything. And, you know, we search for meaning in a world where we cannot prove any kind of overarching meaning of life. We can only create meaning in our lives.
So how does that work with a client that somebody comes along and they want to do something and make some choices, but they're unsure and they're looking for that certainty, and you're sharing with them that there is no certainty?
Well, I might not throw the big guns at them immediately, but existential coaching, it's not necessarily that this is on the surface and you talk about these things. Sometimes we do talk about what is the meaning of life, why am I here, who am I? But very often it's more of a way to understand your client holistically. You know, so you would hear between the lines what their predominant inner conflicts are. You know, some people are having trouble choosing lunch, you know, because choosing a sandwich, then they can't have the pasta, you know, or they could have the 10th sandwich first and then the pasta, but it's a different experience. And some people are like, I can't make this choice because there might be other better choices out there that I'm not making based on this. So choosing a romantic partner, you can't have on all the other ones. You know, choosing to live in a certain country, you can't live in these other countries at this particular time. So this runs in the background for existential coaches. I understand that people will never be anxiety-free. And I understand why people have trouble making choices at an existential level. And
nice.
From that kind of framework, from that foundation, it helps to work with people because you kind of sympathize with people on a human level.
Lovely, lovely. So you're working with us on that real human level of what it is to be a human, I suppose,
mm-hmm.
what it
yes.
is to be alive in this age right now
yeah.
with all the complexities that exist
mm-hmm.
and help us to make those choices or decisions or goals that we want to create
yeah.
or make.
It's never easy. That's the thing. Like, people struggle to make choices and to create goals and to have discipline, to not procrastinate, you know, and they're rooted in our human condition.
Yeah.
You know, so once we have an understanding of that, we can relate to people on that very foundational level
yeah.
because on that level, for once, we're all the same.
That's really interesting because it allows a real sense of I'm okay, you're okay
mm-hmm.
to exist without having
yes.
to describe it or bring it onto the table. It's just part of who you are.
Absolutely. And if you show up as who you are and you relate to people on that level, as we're all human beings, we all grapple with some anxieties, some more, some less, you know, then we can do some, we have a brilliantly strong relationship,
yeah.
you know, and somebody is there who's with you, who has an understanding that, you know, this life stuff is really hard and challenging at times, you know, it's also beautiful, but there's a lot of stuff going on that
yeah.
is difficult, you know, because it's life.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I was talking with somebody a couple of weeks ago about positive psychology. I know that's an area of expertise for you
mm-hmm.
as well. And they were saying that it isn't just about this sort of happy clappy,
yeah.
but it's recognizing that we have high points and low points and looking
mm-hmm.
at how we can maximize those high points or use them to propel us forward
mm-hmm.
in life. And I think sometimes coaches can fall into a little bit of a trap of trying to make things okay and
yeah.
happy and exciting for their clients and not
yeah.
just sit with, as you were saying, grappling with that, the challenges that we all
yeah.
have and we all face.
Yeah, and I have people, many of the students who come to the Positive Psychology CPD, they, you know, in the beginning you kind of ask what they're interested, why they're interested in positive psychology, and they have the same with a Positive Psychology Masters, and they say, well, you know, there's a lot of people who are very negative and we want them to be more positive.
Mm.
You know, so, and that's what positive psychology is and isn't about.
Yeah.
Because on the one side, it is about that because we look at what's right with people. What can we build on? What resources
yeah.
do we have?
Yeah.
How can we build on positive emotions? How can we build resilience?
Yeah.
How can we find out what we're good at, you know, rather than what we need to fix? So positive psychology is a science who actually looked at, you know, what's right with people and how can we use it? Whereas negative psychology or psychology as usual is more about what's the problem and how can we bring it back to normal? Now, this is usually what money is being spent on. You know,
yeah.
when people have problems, they go to see a therapist. You know, now that's changing, luckily, with coaching.
Yeah.
And people realize they can be okay and go further.
Nice.
And this is the notion of positive psychology. You know, how can we go from okay to great?
Brilliant.
You know?
And so I'm always curious about how people mix their different modalities into their practice.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you bring your coaching, your positive psychology, your existential,
mm-hmm.
your philosophy? How does that
yeah.
sort of come together?
Yeah, in the beginning, I thought that was almost a paradox, you know, that was in conflict because whereas positive psychology is all about what's right with people, existentialism, as it's traditionally seen or traditionally, but by lots of people, you have like Camus and Sartre and they're all like, you know, sitting in Parisian cafes, smoking Gauloises and philosophize about how there's no meaning in life and we're all going to die. So it can be seen as quite dark
yeah.
when you look at it on the surface. For me, it wasn't like that because I come from positive psychology and then went into existential.
Okay.
I always saw the liberation and the freedom and the power, the positive value of existential philosophy. Because for me, the fact that, you know, everything ends and there are no rules necessarily in this world that we could prove actually means that it's worth living. Because if nothing ends, then we can make the most out of it. If there's no rules, we make the rules.
Yeah.
And we can do whatever we want.
And it was really interesting, as you said, you know, we all die, it all ends. So you might as well live whilst
yes.
you have the chance,
yes.
because you don't know when that end is going to
exactly.
is going to come
and
about.
There might be an afterlife, there might not be,
ah,
you know, whatever
yeah.
your religious or spiritual belief
yeah.
is. It doesn't really matter because we just don't know. It's a faith. You know, religious faith is a faith. There might be something after. Some people believe in that. Some people don't. But what we do know is that this is real right now, right here.
Yeah.
And our bodies will cease to exist. And I think everybody can agree to that. If there is a soul or a mind or something, or we go back to the earth flow river or whatever happens afterwards, who knows? You know, so what we do know is this is it.
Yeah, but for this physical being in this on this realm right now, this is our experience.
Exactly.
And that experience will end.
Yeah.
So it does create a freedom in going, so enjoy this experience to the best you can.
And not just enjoy this experience, enjoy all of the experience. Because we live in a culture where we seem to get all these messages that we should be comfortable and happy-clappy all the time. That this is kind of this form of happiness, of having positive emotions, is what we should be living for. Whereas the existentialist, and certainly I would say, you know, every experience is valuable. And now when I wake up and I'm having a shitty day, you know, and I'm not feeling good, you know, I know that if I wouldn't experience that, then happy would be the new normal. And very happy would be the new happy, and a little bit happy would be the new sad.
Yeah, and you know, for me as a coach, that really resonates with this notion of sitting with your client's emotion regardless of the emotion.
Yeah.
So not trying to move them from a darker emotion into or a heavy emotion into a light emotion, but just sitting with that emotion because it's all valuable.
Sitting with that, I really love that. The first time I heard that, you know, sit in that for a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, if there's like doubt and there's concern and there's maybe even disgust or like all of the emotions, you know, why would we cut ourselves off from half of the emotions that we feel just because we think they're undesirable?
Yeah.
You know, every emotion is valuable because emotions are a teacher. They show us whenever we feel strongly, there's something that is really important to us. And too many coaches, they don't want to go there.
Yeah.
They don't want to, they feel they need to rescue their clients from feeling negative emotions. Mm. When actually that negative emotion might just be, if you sit with it, it might just show you who you are and where you need to be going.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be that catalytic moment.
Uh-huh.
What do you think happens either as a human or as, or through coaching training that creates coaches that don't or find it difficult to sit with that emotion?
What do I think creates that?
Yeah, what do you think might be going on to enable that?
I think there's we don't like to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, and I think every time we have challenging, it's challenging to sit in that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there are a lot of messages out there that it's not okay to feel bad, you know, that we should somehow change that. And I'm not saying that, you know, we should desire to be sad, but like, it's difficult to sit in that because we want to make people feel good.
Yeah.
You know, we like to feel good. We like to relate to each other in that way. So, and I think there's also lots of people come in. The ultimate goal of why people come to coaching or to therapy or do anything else very often is to feel good or better. You know,
yeah.
And whether they want to earn £1 million or they want to get a promotion, they want to find a partner or they want to make a decision. If you letter that down to the end, if you ask, so if you had £1 million, what then? What would it give you?
Mm.
And then they say, well, you know, I could go on holiday more. So now you could go on holiday more. What would it give you? And then they would say maybe, I would get lots of sunshine and I would feel relaxed. And, you know, at the end of that, there's always some form of feeling good or better.
Yeah.
So I think there's an agenda of helping clients. Clients come in and they say, I want to feel good or better. And perhaps coaches don't quite realize that sometimes you need to sit in the uncomfortable space before you feel good or better.
Yeah.
You know, growth always, like not always, but tends to happen in a state of discomfort. There's a great TED Talk by Bill Ekstrom that some of the negative or the bad experiences that we have in our life when we feel uncomfortable, this is when we really grow.
Mm.
When we feel quite happy and relaxed and comfortable, you know, we don't tend to grow that much.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice to be in that space for some time.
Yeah.
But if we're in that space for too long, we tend to get a bit itchy and, you know, some people even get depressed when nothing changes for a time.
Yeah.
It's one of these existential paradoxes. We don't like things to change when things are good, but if things don't change for too long, we get depressed.
Yeah, that's so interesting, isn't it? Because it allows me to sort of, I suppose, notice how where that sense of unhappiness in stuckness mm-hmm. comes from, that mm-hmm. notion of nothing's changing, it's all the same. And that stuckness creates that unhappiness yeah. that somebody then goes, how do I change yeah. this? What do I do with this?
Some people get stuck in a happy state. So this is the kind of notion when you see somebody who on the surface or from looking in from the outside seems to be super happy. They have enough money, they have a good relationship, they have kids who are, you know, well educated and now have great jobs and they should be happy. But because they've been at this level for too long and nothing changed, they're not happy.
Also with that is that actually externally they are showing the world that they're happy, but internally there is grief or pain or unhappiness or tension.
Yeah, and they feel that they're not allowed to show people that they're unhappy or that they feel stuck. It's like that stuckness in happiness.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, why are you complaining, asshole? You know,
you've got all everything. Yeah, yeah. And I think that the part of that is our upbringing or conditioning that if you have all this stuff, you'll be happy, because all the adverts say, if you have all of this, you're going to be happy.
Just buy this another thing.
Yes, we go, right, so I've got all of that. I can't show the world that I'm unhappy.
Yeah.
So we pretend to be happy externally, but inside, behind closed doors, that's where all the pain sits.
Yeah. In positive psychology, we call this the hedonic treadmill. You know, you buy something and then you get used to it. And then you buy something else and then you get used to it again. And then you're on a treadmill because you keep buying and it works for a little while and then you adapt to it again. This ability for people to adapt is our greatest strength and our greatest weakness, you know, because we adapt to positive things just as we adapt to negative things. So you can take somebody's job away and send them in a tiny little house. You know, as long as we have the basics, we're going to adapt to that and we're going to be able to live with that. There's people who are living in the most horrendous conditions and they're okay. Some even are happy, you know.
Yeah.
But the same way, if something really good happens to you and you move into a bigger house with more rooms and like drive a faster car or like have more money, have a bigger salary, you adapt to that. You get used to it.
Yeah.
And after 6 months, it's the same again.
So there's something really interesting there that sort of rings a sort of a spiritual or Buddhist bell for me around that sense of contentment. Wow, is contentment the right word? I'm not sure if that's the right word, but being okay with yourself and not with the things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a sense of this non-attachment.
Mm.
You know, that you're not detached, you're not overly attached,
but
you're non-attached, so it's okay to just be.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't necessarily need anything.
Yeah.
To be okay with yourself, to just be sitting there. And I think coaching in that sense is a place, and existential coaching in particular, I think, is a place to be still. To sit with yourself while somebody else is also there.
Yeah.
You know, because we're not necessarily we don't really give lots of advice or like guide anybody anywhere where we think they should go. We just give people a space to be with themselves while somebody else is there so they can hear themselves talk.
Yeah.
You know, and that at the foundation on a humanistic level, you know, that is what really moves people. But that is only one part of coaching.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Awesome. Awesome. It's just, mind blowing. So, okay. So that's one part of coaching. I suppose that's one part of the work.
Yeah. I think from here, like that day on humanistic coaching that I teach at uni is like, I see whenever I get people to engage with the humanistic space, coaches start to feel, they start to relax. They start to feel okay with just going into the space and being themselves, you know, and just giving the person that space without necessarily having to know the answers.
So this is what I love about some of the work of Nancy Klein and Carl Rogers, that notion of just being there silent or reflective with your client.
Yeah. Time to think, for them to hear themselves talk.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's a little voice in our head, that's what Roger said. There's a little voice, well, I'm paraphrasing. There's a little voice in your head that tells you to do the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, but too many people have unlearned to hear that because there's so much noise in our heads. You know, there's too many messages from advertising, from our parents, from our friends, and they all mean well. Well, I'm not sure about the advertising. You know, if we start to be still, we can start filtering out the voices that are not us.
Yeah.
And start to really listen to what's really coming from the inside or inside or whatever there might be, you know? Mm. And then we can start listening to that and start doing, well, the right thing. Start doing getting in touch with who we are and listen to our authentic voice.
Yeah, Yeah, and that word you use there, that listening to our authentic voice and getting in touch with who we are, because mm-hmm. one of my thoughts around this is that when we are in touch with who we are and our authentic voice, mm-hmm. that's where a sense of bliss or happiness comes from,
yeah.
because we're doing what we want to do, how we want
yes.
to do it.
Exactly, and sometimes that voice tells us to do some really scary stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and we kind of know that we should be doing that, but at the same time, we don't like to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But we know that if we feel uncomfortable for some time, we get huge rewards
yeah.
out of it.
Yeah.
Sometimes we know what the right thing to do is, but we're scared because we don't like to feel that way.
Yeah, and I suppose there's, you know, there's a lot of fear that our clients bring into the coaching
yes.
space. I say a lot, that may be a slight exaggeration, but our clients bring their fears into the space
yeah.
of what they're afraid of doing or the change,
yeah.
the fear of mm-hmm. The change.
But so do the coaches. Every coach brings their anxieties and their fears into
yeah.
the coaching space
yeah.
too. And I think that is part of the reason why sometimes we know we should be challenging a client on what they just said or an assumption that they've just made. Or we should put them away from that feeling that they have right now. You know, you see a client feel uncomfortable in the space and you have an urge to make them not feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, that rescuer kicks
yeah.
in.
Yeah. So, but sometimes my inner voice is telling me, wait a second, that sounded like bullshit.
Yeah.
But will you really say that, you know, to then say, well, I think what you just said, I don't, you know, you're contradicting yourself. That's a difficult thing to say.
Because we create a difficult space and then we don't want to feel difficult or uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So we might avoid it.
Yeah, but it's all in the contracting. If somebody sits down with me and without much chit-chat, we go straight to the subject matter and then I say, well, you're contradicting yourself. The client would be taken aback and be like,
yeah.
oh my God, like
yeah.
you make me feel like you just called me out and like, you know, they feel... It needs to be contracted.
Yeah.
So you have that conversation before and you say, hey, this is a space where you grow. Growth means discomfort
yeah.
to some extent. You know,
this is brilliant.
And you need to agree to that.
I was having a conversation with Osman Sabir around contracting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and he was talking about, you know, his contracting consultation sessions are like 3 hours long.
Because
mm-hmm. he's like, I want them to know me. I want them to know how mm-hmm. I work. I don't understand mm-hmm. them. And I want to go through the work in how I work.
Yeah.
So that when I am in a session, if they agree to work with me and I'm in
yeah.
a session, then they're okay with me calling yeah. me out, me calling them
exactly.
out,
exactly,
me giving them my ideas
yes.
or thoughts.
Since I started doing 2-hour free consultations, in the beginning it sounded like crazy because why would I give up 2 hours of my time for free?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
it's so important because once you're through that, you get a really good sense for who you are talking to, for where that person is coming from. And your client has a really good idea about what you're about, what is okay in the space. You know, and get a sense of, you know, your style
yeah.
and, you know, yes, I will be challenged. Yes, Yannick's going to call me out on my shit if
yeah.
I you know, contradict myself
yeah.
or,
yeah.
you know, if he hears some assumptions or limiting beliefs, I'm going to say, hey, this is what I'm noticing.
Yeah.
You know, so once they agree to go on that journey with you based on what they've experienced in those 2 hours, being introduced to it, that this might be happening. You know, there might be awkward silences
yeah.
where I give you the space because I don't want to lead you. And then some people really are uncomfortable with that silence. And some part of me wants to jump in and help them.
Yeah, yeah.
But I learned that, you know, that's not necessarily good.
How did you learn that? What was it that, yeah, how did you learn that?
Experience and guts.
Lovely.
Having
Lovely.
The courage to try it out.
Yeah.
And I think the training space is an extremely important space where you can try that out.
Yeah.
But training space can be created as well. I even experienced coaches, I tell them, you know, go find some training clients. Try out some new techniques.
Yeah,
you
lovely.
Know, coach them for free or for very little under the understanding that, you know, you're going to try out some new stuff.
Yeah, I think
And then you just need to be courageous, follow your instincts. Sometimes it's going to be weird. You know, sometimes we need to take a risk and say something. And it's a split-second decision sometimes, you know. I could challenge the client right now or I could not do it. Are you going to do it or not? And you need to decide immediately.
Yeah.
And sometimes, well, it could have gone better. Sometimes... it's exactly what they needed to hear at that moment.
Awesome.
So you just need to learn to follow your instincts. And I learned over the years to trust my instincts when I have a certain impulse to challenge, to jump in, even if I have to interrupt them, you know, then I'll go for it. And yes, one or two times has backfired, you know, and they feel interrupted, but you should have that conversation
yeah.
And contract that they say, hey, you know, you interrupted me quite a lot. You know, or you check in after the session.
Yeah.
It's like, hey,
yeah.
is there anything I could do more of or less of?
Yeah.
And then hopefully they're going to be open and honest and say, hey, you could give me a bit more space to talk. Or like, I don't know, that was a really weird moment.
Brilliant. Yanning, I could talk with you for hours. We don't have hours, so I'm going to have to invite you back for another conversation. But before we close, where can we find you if we want to get hold of you to talk more?
www.existential.coach.
Awesome. Brilliant. It's been a real pleasure, Yanning. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thank you.
Lovely.